Hey, this is Kate Bidulich from FatLossAccelerators.com, and welcome to today's call. Now, I'm totally pumped for this one because on the phone, I've got a very special guest, Lee Peel from LeePeel.com. Very, very original name, Lee. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day to chat with us, and welcome to the call.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. I'm very happy to be here.
Awesome. So, great to have you on today, and I've been following your work for quite some time now, but for those readers who may not know you, why don't you start off by introducing yourself so I don't miss anything and you can give us a bit of your background.
Okay, the background spiel. I am Lee Peel. I am a National Academy of Sports Medicine Certified Personal Trainer. That is my chief certificate. I recently got certified as a golf specialist as well. One scramble.
Really?
To get
how
my...
cool is that?
I have to get CAUs every year, and my dad plays golf. He loves golf, and he doesn't get to play it very often, but he loves golf. And I was like, I was looking at things that I could get and things that I could get certified in, and I thought, you know what, just for kicks, just for fun, I'm going to get certified as a golf specialist. So I did. I got certified as a golf specialist, and you can do a lot of things as a daughter to make your dad proud. And I think this probably hits the top of it for him. That's what
absolutely.
I needed to do.
Absolutely.
That's what I needed to do all these years to make my father happy was, nothing else has really quite tipped the hat like me becoming certified as a golf specialist, and the cheesy grin that he had was just was very fantastic. So, I have those certifications, and my chief love, of course, though, is nutrition and body recomposition, fat loss, metabolism research, things like that. It is kind of my addiction, if you will, regarding this kind of field and fitness industry. I love mechanics and I love training and things like that as well. I don't want to knock it, but what kind of gets me in the studies I get the most excited about and the things I get most jazzed about is definitely the nutrition, weight, manipulation and things like that. So that's kind of my thing. But I've been doing this for years now, and I've worked with people in person. I work with people online, I couldn't be happier. I tried to knock out some books, and just keeping this thing going and trying to reach as many people as I can reach. And it's just been an amazing journey, and I couldn't be more excited.
That's awesome. It's really cool, and I think what you're saying there about just doing stuff that you love. It's, I think, a privilege sometimes to look back and go, wow, I'm doing what I love every day and helping
yeah.
people in the process.
Absolutely. Awesome. I mean, this is definitely one of those things I would do regardless of being paid.
Yeah, I think that's the same for most, if not all fitness professionals, I would hope.
I would hope so, too. Yeah, it's a pretty fun job. So, we're all quite a happy bunch whenever we're doing our job, and I think you have to be that way because it has to be infectious, because it's hard to get people to do some of the things that we get them to do sometimes. So I think if you're not happy doing what you're doing, it's not going to work very well, especially with this job.
Absolutely. So very, very true. So we've gone philosophical right from the start. So let's talk a little more about some of the nutrition stuff.
Okay.
And particularly, I wanted to chat with you a little bit about starvation mode, because you see it flashed around in magazines and on websites and things like that. And what I really want to know is, do you think the starvation mode, does it actually exist? And if it does, what is it?
This is a big question. Does it exist?
Yes.
I think a lot of the issue with starvation mode as a phrase is, and what I relate it to a lot, especially to other trainers, is the phrase itself has gotten very confused and very manipulated over the years. Does it exist in a technical sense? I believe it does. It's how you explain what it is wherein lies the issue. It's a lot like toning in the training world, and that's how I relate it a lot, is that Technically, we don't really like the phrase toning. We try and kind of stay away from it because it doesn't really actually mean anything. But in a semantic sense, if you got into an argument, you could find a definition to toning, which is the increase of muscle definition and the removal of body fat. That is, in a manner of speaking, toning. And with starvation mode, it's a little bit similar of a topic. It does exist in the sense that your body makes adjustments when we go into diet down. It adapts, and it has adaptations that take place to a dieting down situation. That is a very true statement. So when you hear people say, when you start dieting down, your body goes into starvation mode, technically that is a true statement to make. But what they're saying starvation mode is, and what people are thinking it is where the complication comes in, and usually the wrong statements come into play. What it actually is whenever we go into a deficit, whenever we do diet down in order to lose fat, and that is the only way to lose fat, is to go into a caloric deficit in order to pull stores of fat from our body. We have certain metabolic adjustments that take place. Certain hormones and various things in the body are going to alter. Some things go up, cortisol, for example, or our appetite and ghrelin. And some things go down, leptin, or various testosterone hormones and things like that. So we have alterations and changes that happen almost immediately. In some studies, we see that leptin, for example, decreases as much as over 50% in 1 week in females. So we have alterations in these hormones. We have changes. We have things that take place. But it has to happen, because it's the only way to lose fat, and there's really nothing that we can do about that. The problem that comes in is when we go too long, we go too hard, and we don't try to come out of that phase with feeding and eating at a normal maintenance need for nutrition, and we basically try to drive ourselves too far into the ground, and our metabolic adaptations get a little too aggressive, and we start to feel the side effects from those things a little too intensely. It does not mean we can't lose fat in the absence or while in a deficit. It does not mean that some of the things that you hear, like, oh, you start storing fat instead of burning it and all these kinds of things, those are completely mythical statements. They are not true. But there are a lot of problems that can be in between, from water retention to decrease in caloric burn, and therefore making deficits harder and harder to reach, things like that. So there are a lot of angles that you can discuss when talking about starvation mode. But the actual phrase, that's where we end up having a lot of problems, and I think that's where a lot of arguments come into play. Adaptations, yes. Technically, the term is adaptive thermogenesis or metabolic adaptation, but starvation mode, I don't personally use it anymore, more because of the condensation tied to it than such it is as the absolute wrong term. But I obviously use it in a tongue-in-cheek manner with the title of the book and when I'm doing articles and things like that, because that's what people are expecting to see when they're talking about these kind of topics.
Sure, absolutely. And I think that, the whole 3 hour, eat every 3 hours or your body is going to shut down and go into starvation mode. Oh, God. What is that?
Yeah, I mean, there's all those kinds of things. And I think you obviously, and to be fair to any trainer out there that has ever said it, and there are some things that I said in my time, I think the intention is good, and we're coming from this place of like, oh, well, if you fuel your body as much as possible, and if you do these things, you're going to be in the most optimal metabolic place. It's not like it's not coming from a good intended place, or that there isn't some sort of logic behind it on a certain level. It's the absolute statements that we make about it that can be wrong. And when we look at the research, for example, on the meal timing, we see that there really is no difference in how many meals in which that we eat in a day and how we space things out for most individuals. But there also can be arguments for that as well. And I think what we can look at more is and what I always try and tell my clients or readers is that compliance is 100% the thing that you should be the most concerned about at all times. What diet allows you to comply and what diet allows you to get the most out of your situation that you're in right now? what meal timing, what kind of protein, macronutrients in there, or the gram amounts and carbohydrates, all these types of things. What helps you comply? And that should be first and foremost, because the compliance is going to help you reach the goal, whatever the goal is that you're trying to achieve. But obviously, often I deal with fat loss the most. But, a lot of these myths, though, pertaining to you can only do these things. If you don't do these things, your metabolism is going to crash, or if you do cardio, your metabolism is going to crash, or if you do any of these things, your metabolism is going to crash, or if you don't do these things, you're going to have a sluggish metabolism, and I'm sure we'll cover all those kinds of topics, but these are the kinds of things that I try and hush, because they create what I find a kind of neuroticism in the client, to where they're like, oh, do I go left or do I go right? Do I zig? Do I zag? And they just, they end up getting confused. They hear one thing from one person, they hear one thing from another, and I find that confusion leads to a standstill. And that's exactly what we don't want. We don't want them to be in a standstill. We want them to be progressing forward. And so that's what I always try and do, is get people progressing forward as quickly as possible. And sometimes you have to remove myths to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that, I think even with myself, when you said, I think I used to advise people to eat every 3 hours, because at that time it was advised, there were no conflicting studies saying, that this wasn't the right way to go about it. But I've said it before.
Yeah, and it's I don't think anyone was going to be harmed by that. You know what I mean? I don't think anything's, and there's still some bodybuilders to this day that, no matter, regardless of what the studies say, they're going to stand by it. And it also makes sense for a lot of people to do that. It makes perfect sense for a lot of people to do that. It's still a great strategy. Nothing wrong with that strategy. I think the only difference is, do we tie to the term, this is the optimal way, or you're going to destroy something by not, And I think that's where those little devil in the details are. But I used to advise my clients to eat frequently as well. It's what we did. And we start analyzing and critically thinking more, and we find different routes to things, and that's okay.
Exactly. But I think you're right. As long as people are moving forward or in some direction and not just standing still, doing nothing, that's the most important thing.
Absolutely. Paralysis by overanalysis is what we try to avoid as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's a girl thing too. We tend to read into everything and overanalyze. I mean, personally speaking anyway.
Oh, us human beings? No, never.
Yeah. All right, Lee, well, let's chat a little bit about calories. It seems to me that every woman I meet is on a diet, and she's on a 1,200 calorie diet for fat loss. And to me, it seems ridiculous, but what are your nutrition guidelines that you advise for clients to follow?
Yeah. First and foremost, I think that it should be important in the safest and the caveat sense that when it comes to assessing your nutritional needs within your state parameters, you should always consult with the proper authority in that sense. What I take a lot of my nutritional guidelines from is I just go to the research. I go to the research and I look at what we're doing right now, what we know about protein amounts, carbohydrate amounts, fat amounts, things like that. I look at the World Health Organization. I look at the USDA. I look at the RDA. I look at independent research. I look at peer review research. And from that, kind of throw it in a little bit of a generator, and we get guidelines for general populations, for athletes, and all these types of things. And we have really good ideas about what's going on and about what we need in order to maintain our health. And when I was thinking about when I read the books, and this is just in general, I'm not just only going to buy the book and you'll find out I'm going to give the cal away. But when I was writing it, I was trying to think about how can I best come across with explaining that there is a kind of minimal level of nutritional need that we all have to fulfill. And then there's an optional base. A lot of people right now, and it's funny, I did not hear about it. I really genuinely didn't hear about it until after the books have written and until recently. But a lot of people are talking about, like, if it fits in your macros, and they talk about things like that. I don't have a fancy term for it. I just plugged away at some research and came up with some numbers. But I have a minimal macro intake that it's not technically my recommendation in the sense of I pulled it out of thin air. It's a research-based recommendation from a collection of review and research that have come about. I've literally typed it on the paper. But I have a minimal macro recommendation that everyone should get in order to achieve safety, to get the daily requirement of essential fatty acids, to get their daily requirement of protein, and yes, a daily requirement of carbohydrates. While technically not an essential nutrient, and while technically we can survive without carbohydrates on a basic primitive level, there are certain vitamins and there are certain optimizations in nutrition that we have to achieve by getting in carbohydrates. So, if we're looking at general population, for example, I'm going to give the stats. For protein intake, we're looking at around 0.6 to 0.8 grams of your weight in pounds. For carbohydrates, it's about 0.2 to 0.3 grams in weight in pounds, and in fat, it's about 0.25 to 0.35. Now, if someone was adding that up towards the weight in pounds, they'd come up with a very small number. For a 130-pound woman, it would be, under 1,000 calories that they would come up with. That is not what you're supposed to eat in a day. That is your minimal macronutrient requirements. It's kind of like your nutritional BMR. You have to make sure to get in those requirements on that basic level. You get in that, and you're going to cover for your body weight in pounds in a general basis anyway. Then this is, again, for general healthy populations. You're going to cover your basic nutritional needs. You're going to cover the essential fatty acids that you need. You're going to cover your essential amino acids, and you're going to cover a base amount of vitamins. And then it's, of course, depending upon how well you select your nutrition. But if you're selecting that in protein and in fat and in carbohydrates, you're probably going to be doing a pretty good job. Everything after that is, I always say, an elective course in school or an optional kind of thing. You kind of throw it towards whatever you need the most and what's going on in your situation. And it's going to vary depending upon what your goals are, how aggressive your fat loss is, or maintenance, whatever it is you're trying to approach. But you're going to allot those calories to those different areas. And everyone is going to be different. I, for example, function much better off a higher carbohydrate intake than other people may function off of. I'm also a vegetarian, so trying to be low-carbon vegetarian is kind of a silly thing to do. But
what do you eat?
Yeah, exactly, right.
You eat eggs.
Yeah, you eat eggs. You just eat eggs all day long. Eggs and protein shakes. And I do get my eggs in, so it's like there's a, and the caveat, it's just for personal reasons, it's not for any sort of health reason. But, so different people obviously are going to need different things, and different people have different compliance that they're going to have to different diet types. So whatever that is, you will elect it to that. And that's about as complicated as I get from a macronutrient standpoint. And it works very, very well, and it gives people some freedom. Is it a little math heavy? Is it a little bit more complicated than portions? Absolutely. Do people not like going to that kind of a detail? Yes, and I totally understand that. And that's where you can fall back on things like portions in the hands and that kind of stuff. And a lot of people have different techniques, and none of those techniques are wrong. But from a scientific standpoint, I like to get a little geekier. And that's where I like to go with the recommendations from that. Now, you said the calorie issue. I think calories should be set upon goals, and they should be set upon the individual. If someone is very, sedentary, we have a lot of overall generalized statements about all these calories are too low, or everyone should at least be eating this. And I think for the most part, we're going to find that 1,200 calories is too low for the majority of people that are training and that are taking part in physical activity. But for some individuals, a 5-foot, 120-pound female who is trying to get to the last little bit of her body fat level, that's a small, very small, small individual. She doesn't deserve a lot of food. And if she works in an office and is very sedentary, even with the training session, I've had the readings, I've done it, at best she might burn 1,700 calories a day. Nothing's wrong with her metabolism. She's not broken. She's just a tiny little thing with a very sedentary job, and she can only get in so much training in a day. So there are exceptions to the rule. And I like to always let people keep open to those exceptions. But for the most part, we find that feeding for a metabolic rate best possible is going to allow you to move more and burn more. And a deficit should be based upon how much you can move in a day to still achieve the deficit goal that you're going to achieve and not shut down or break down as frequently. And while a lot of low-calorie diets can be very sexy, and they can be very enticing, especially even really complicated technical ones like protein-sparing modified fast diets and things like that, or very long, prolonged ifing regimens. I personally am not a fan of them for the majority of people, and there is a very, very small subset of people I would ever even think about recommending something like that to for conversation, because the majority of people are not going to be able to stick to it, or they're going to have very negative repercussions to it. Maybe they'll get through it, but then afterwards they're going to be binging, and we have to take these kinds of things into account. So I hate to be boring, and I was pretty long-winded to get here, but I do believe that a moderate caloric deficit is generally the best way to go, and sticking to a more of the, you know, the slow and steady rinse the weight race kind of aspect is the most important. But I will say, if you are going for a little bit more of an extreme transformation with your clients or with yourself, the more that you need to know what you're doing. I think that that's very crucial. Not about fast or detox or any sort of weird thing, and I don't mean fast in the sense of intermittent fasting or intelligent fasting, but like lemonade cleanse fast or these types of things. You need to understand protein intake. You need to understand what you're doing, and you need to be informed when you're doing something like that when it comes to manipulating that nutrition, and more than likely you should probably be working with someone at least in the beginning. And I think that that's very true. But hopefully that answered the question a little bit. I don't know, Kate, did I answer
absolutely.
That question
no,
for you?
Great. All right. No, that's great info. I mean, I think the bottom line here is just be smart and stay safe. Like, don't
well, there you go.
Crazy.
Completely simplifying my answer is what you did there. Yeah,
I think that was the bottom line, I think, that came out.
Yeah,
was that there's guidelines created for you to stay safe. And
absolutely.
Be smart. Don't do something stupid. It's
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. You nailed it much better than I did. I don't even know I'm on this call anymore. You're totally
no,
stealing my thunder.
You gave the great background and the great reasons behind it. I mean,
yeah.
It really does really come down to the activity that you're doing. And if your body needs fuel, you need to feed it.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it really is that simple, and everything else is the details that allows us to stick to what we're trying to do, allows us to stick to what we're trying to pull off, and that's no simple feat. I don't mean to undermine it, but it is that simple. So
exactly, easy and simple are different.
Yes, they are. Yes, they
very,
are.
Very,
very
different.
Very, very different. It can break me to my knees sometimes how different. Yes,
yes.
They're very, very different.
Now, you briefly mentioned just before, just talking a little bit about breaking down and breaking your metabolism from dieting. Now, is this something that can happen, and is this something that is reversible if it does happen, breaking your metabolism?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people will say that. Oh God, I've totally broken my metabolism, or I've damaged my metabolism, or I have to fix it. And that's where initially, for anyone that might have known me from any sort of stint of time ago that could be listening to this, that's where I initially came up with the idea for the metabolic repair manual, which is what initially I started out with, was to kind of. An air quote, a repair manual to metabolic problems. The reason I didn't keep that title and the reason that I chose to alter that title is I didn't like the implication. I kind of thought of it as this acute thing, like, oh, if you have a problem with your car, you just reach over to the repair guide and you figure out what's wrong with it and then you fix it. I didn't like the implication, though, that something was broken. And I think that it kind of implied that there is a broken to something, and there is not. And I wanted to make it clear. And so that was one of the reasons when people keep asking, like, oh, why didn't you keep it the metabolic repair manual? That's exactly why. I don't want people to think that it's a broken issue, because it's not. I've looked at the research, and I've known individuals, and I don't want to get too heavy, but I've seen the eating disorders take people's lives. And I've been knee deep in the kind of physical problems that can happen when individuals decide that they no longer want to eat food. And obviously there is very severe mental repercussions that are taking place there and there's health issues. And when people get to a state or a point to where they get into that kind of level to where it becomes a physical danger for them, there are all kinds of psychological problems that are also taking place because of lack of food and really a delirium that's existing for these kind of individuals. And I've seen individuals on the breath of death and come back from it. And the end result, and the reason that I say that is because to some degree there's a dramaticism, and I do not mean this to downplay the problems that people are experiencing, but when you see people go to that kind of extreme and you understand a 5'7", 82-pound girl who will not feed herself and is tube fed or rested up in a hospital and then recover from that, fine. You kind of start to understand what the body's capable of recovering from. And not to mention, we have research as well. I mean, it's an anecdote that I share, but we do have research that shows the recovery of metabolic rates and how people can recover from things in very dire starvation situations, both from research curiosities and how far they can drive people in the ground, or from psychological or physical things like anorexia, and also people who have been homeless, people in other countries who have very low amounts of food intake that they are given. So we have lots to look at on this, and I can comprehensively say that broken is a very poor term. You can, in many instances and for many reasons, have your body pushed too far to where it does have permanent adaptations take place. Cancers and things like that are a great example, and certain diseases. But that is not the general healthy population, and these kinds of things are very, very rare and not at all who I would speak to. So for the average dieter who, yeah, pushes it too far with competitions, trains too much, and definitely runs themselves very hard, can there be short-term repercussions or even possible long-term repercussions with issues of thyroid or reproductive stress and things like that? Yeah, it can exist. But for the majority, and I do mean the mass majority, these things are absolutely recoverable. And the way that we recover these things is from taking care of ourselves and from eating, and not just eating clean and not just eating well, but eating for maintenance need, eating for need of what it is that we expend on a daily basis and the recovery from doing that, and sometimes taking training breaks and sometimes being a little bit more coddling to your system for a little bit of a while. But recovery, we absolutely can. And there are some researches that looks into, for example, extreme anorexia cases or bulimia cases, in which that it takes a while for certain hormone markers to return back to place. But a lot of these studies are not monitored or feed monitored studies. They're free living and they're individual case reported studies, meaning that they're reporting what they eat, they're reporting their activity expenditure. And to some degree, we have to wonder how well are these girls with previous histories of under-eating, how well are they eating to their full ability and things like that, because we see a mix in the studies that some return back to baseline very quickly and others can take a longer time to do so. And we don't quite know in a metabolic ward rated level how well that can be true. So But even those girls, they still is a return to baseline and can just take a little bit longer than others. My main point, though, is being that you can drive yourself pretty hard and you can do some pretty vicious things to yourself and you can recover from it. So the thing I think to focus on is not so much to be like, oh, I'm never going to get over this. I'm never going to get back to normal. My metabolism is broken. I'm not going to be okay. I've destroyed myself forever. Don't get in that kind of frame of thought. Just don't go there because chances are you're going to be fine, and you can get with your doctor, and you can look at levels, and you can feed yourself, and you can get to a very good place very quickly, and panicking is the last thing we want to do in this situation. Remaining calm and feeding ourselves and taking care of ourselves and finding some peace is the number one, you know, that's the step. That's where you want to be, so... yeah, don't look at it as a broken kind of situation if that's where you're at or if you're finding yourself in a situation like that, yeah.
Cool. So then what's your number one tip then for someone who could be suffering from a sluggish metabolism?
Number one tip from a sluggish metabolism, eating is the number one tip. But more
anything
so cycling.
Particular?
Yeah, yeah. We achieve our optimal metabolic rate when we're eating as close to our caloric maintenance as possible. That's how we achieve our optimal metabolic rate. And then with our manipulation of macronutrient intake, making sure that we have our, like I talked about, our minimal macronutrients and things like that. So when you do that and you eat for maintenance need, you're going to eat more and therefore you're going to burn more. Body temperature is going to be higher and recovery is going to be better and it's easier to gain muscle. And that's why, you know, if you have hard gainers and weightlifting and things like that, it's because they're not eating enough and eating. The more you eat, the more you burn, and the more you weigh from a physical standpoint as well, so keep that in mind. But eating is absolutely number one metabolism speeder upper, and there's no special food. Protein and carbohydrates together are better than just protein alone. These kinds of things are always neglected. So having a balanced macronutrient profile and eating, that's your number one metabolism booster. By far. And so if you have to go into a deficit, the thing that makes the most sense is that you go into your deficit, you do what you have to do, and in intervals and breaks every so often, be it cycling within the week or taking week span breaks in a month or in 2 months, things like that, making sure that you go from deficit periods to maintenance periods frequently. And you do it for more than just a cheat meal, or you do it more than just a day at a time, and then you return back into those deficits, and you rinse and repeat, and you knock it out, and that's the easiest way and the best way to achieve your body composition goals. It just is.
Well, that's awesome. Like, thanks so much, Lee. This information is so helpful, and I'm sure that everyone listening is taking away plenty of really great ideas, particularly with, you know, how to boost their metabolism, but also just killing some of those crazy myths about starvation mode and broken metabolism that they'll see splashed all over the mass media. But just before we head off, where can people get some more information about you and check out your awesome book, the one that I've read, and also just to get in contact with you?
Keep it as simple as possible. You can find me at leephill.com, L-E-I-G-H-P-E-E-L-E, or you can Google Leephill and click on the link that takes you to leephill.com. You can find how to buy books there or whatever else you want to find, articles, all that kind of stuff. The free stuff is there. So you can, I always say start with the free stuff, right? The free stuff is there.
Yeah, well, they can stalk you on Facebook, too.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's facebook.com/Lee Pill. I'm a narcissist. What can I say? I also have a name that wasn't, I don't have Jessica Johnson, thank God, because I probably wouldn't have gotten that Facebook name. So I have the Facebook name and I have the domain name, and you can find me like that pretty simply.
Well, you're all set. That is perfect. All righty. Well, thank you so much again, Lee. I really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone else, for being on the call. We'll be back again next month with another awesome one. So have a great one. Keep on rocking, everyone, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.